Good morning, and this is WBER and People, Profit, and Planet. I'm Nancy Gift, and this is Joan Pauley, my partner in crime on sustainability at Berea College. So we're glad to have you with us. And Joan, you brought us a guest.
I sure did, all the way from Australia.
That's awesome.
We have Helen,
It's Angelakis.
Angelakis, from all the way from Sydney. She's the sustainability coordinator at Western Sydney University, and there's like 40,000 students.
Yes, we have around 40,000 full and part-time students, and we have 6 campuses spread over the Greater Western Sydney area.
So she's got, I mean, I think we've got a lot on our plates here with Berea, but that's just mind-boggling. So Helen and I met at a conference a couple of years ago, and I started describing what we do here in Berea, and so she said, well, you know, if I'm ever back in the States, I'd love to come visit. And she actually did. She was here again for a conference and then carved out some time to come down, and she's going to be meeting with Sean Clark to go see the farm, and hopefully with you, Nancy, and some other people. So it's really nice that she's willing to spend some time here at Berea and find out about Berea. But since we have her here, I thought it would be fun to talk about sustainability in Australia and to talk about some of the things you focus on and some of the challenges and the issues facing Australia from a sustainability standpoint.
A lot of it, we are focusing a lot around energy and clean energy. And we are fortunate, we have a lot of sun. So there's a lot of solar in Australia. In saying that, we still have coal and we do hydro, but we're trying to encourage householders at least to think more sustainable and get solar panels and use solar in their home. We also do have some wind turbines, not so much in all areas of Australia because we don't always have a lot of wind, and there's been a lot of controversy about the noise and the impact that the wind the turbines have. So we do have some wind, but not a lot.
Yeah, and you were telling me about, did you say the campus is powered by solar?
Yeah, one of our campus, which is the campus that I'm on, has a solar array that feeds back into the grid, but it's enough to power the whole campus. Yeah.
Can you imagine?
That's exciting.
Isn't that exciting?
Wow. Yeah.
So your utilities are supportive of that in Australia?
Yes, they are. We have a mandate where we have to report on our energy usage and carbon emission that we have to do every year. Mm. So we're very mindful of what we do on our campuses because of that.
And you report that to the government?
Yes, we do. And if we exceed what, and I don't do the reporting, so I'm not quite sure what the figures are, but we seem to do very well. Yeah.
That's fantastic. I mean, here in the United States, you don't do any of that. It's a self-reporting through our STARS and greenhouse gas emissions reports, but it's all voluntary.
Well, and plus which the utility companies are often not very friendly to solar because they see it as taking away from their bottom line rather than really taking a big picture what would actually be good for our place.
Right.
So it's kind of wonderful and shocking to hear about an appropriately self-interested entity, although I'm sure Australia has its issues. But after yesterday's vote, I'm not at all convinced that we have the right self-interest going on there. So.
Yeah. It was shocking. But anyway, the other thing that you were talking about was the fact that Australia was providing, was it incentives or was it policy for homeowners to use solar?
Yes, when you build a new home, a few years back now, there was much more an incentive for homeowners when they build a new home to put in solar panels. And it fed back into the grid, and the energy company gave you a rebate. But the rebate has reduced substantially, so it's not such a huge incentive now for people that are have already existing buildings. But if you build a new home, the government offers you a small incentive to put on solar panels.
So besides focusing on energy, what other kinds of initiatives do you guys have going on over there?
Well, within our university in particular, and it is an issue everywhere, is waste. Mm. So
you're talking our story.
Welcome to Joan's World.
Yeah. Yeah, so we do have obviously a lot of issues like everybody with waste and landfill and methane. So there's always, we're always trying to find new ways of handling that. Mm-hmm. And we, at our university, we do co-mingling. So we have an organisation that comes and picks it all up and then sorts it. And so it reduces our landfill, and we've saved quite an amount of money over mm-hmm. a number of years since we've initiated that program.
I like that word, commingling. It sounds a little better than single stream, which sounds like something that might happen in a urinal.
Exactly. We'll adopt that.
You can have that. I'll give that to you.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Cool.
Yeah. So, and water. Where my campus is, we have a river, and we're always mindful of the water streams and the water systems. Mm-hmm. And we do a lot of water testing. A lot of our students in their degrees focusing a lot on our waterways. Mm-hmm. And so that's another issue.
Yeah.
That we have.
You also have a sustainable tourism program, which I found fascinating.
Yeah, we do. It's in one of our programs. It's sustainable tourism, and it's been going for a number of years. It's just recently that it's come to light in our office, and we're starting to support it a little bit more. And so at our Hawkesbury campus, which is where we have our river and our river farm, we're trying to reinvigorate that to accommodate tourism. We have a lot of history there, so we've been talking to the tourism groups within our area to see what we can do there. And our students, we've been fortunate enough to gain some funding for some of our students to travel overseas to Korea, to a centre over there, to see how we can, we're looking at assisting them with getting tourism in the area.
Mm-hmm. You were also talking about, and this is the people part of what I found fascinating, that you're sending students over to help with human trafficking.
Yes, we work with a young woman, Stephanie Lorenzo, her name is. She's only young, she's only 30, and she's practically devoted her life now to young girls and the sex trade in particular. And she goes to Cambodia a number of times a year. And the big issue is, especially in Cambodia, is finding them work. So once they get out of the sex trade, you've got to give them something to do, or else they go straight back. Because a lot of them don't know any different. They've been taken away as slaves, but then that's the only life they know, and you've got to give them something when they get out of it. So we're looking at trying to take a bunch of students over there with her next year to see how tourism may be able to help.
Right, in the right ways, and yes. In the wrong ways.
Yes, yeah.
Which I find is fascinating that it's grouped. So that's such a concrete example of when we talk about people, mm-hmm. planet, profit. Mm-hmm. That's a great example.
Right. Well, especially because it's often planet problems, environment problems right. that are driving people off their land or
right.
out of their communities. So. Mm-hmm. It's a lot more, it's linked at so many different levels, both mm-hmm. from the source where the girls come from, and then, like you say, you have to have jobs when they get out, and so that would also impact and be affected by the environment. Mm. So, right.
And then you also have, talk about the regional centers. That was fascinating,
too. Our regional center. It's a UN-endorsed center. It's a regional center of expertise for education. It's a regional centre of expertise on education for sustainable development, and it's these are centres that are generally housed at universities or educational institutions, and there's around about 130 of them globally, and we are part of that network at UW, at our university. And it does come with no money, no funding, but we, and all of them are run very differently, but we still connect globally. Ours in particular, we are fortunate enough that we can offer some funding to our partners, and we have we've kept ours quite small, and we have educational partners, schools, high schools, primary schools, we have college, technical colleges, we have non-profit organisations, and some larger government organisations are part of our centre and councils, government mm-hmm. councils. And so we what we do is really initiate the conversation and get the groups to work together, and we can offer them small amounts of funding to start up programs. Mm-hmm. And we also, because it's a global organisation, we are able to talk to the other centres around the world. And what I do in particular is look at student exchange. Mm.
Wow. Be great to know that for some of our students
it
here.
It would be nice to know that. Our students certainly enjoy a lot of good travel abroad.
Absolutely.
So
and it's
that's wonderful.
And what's the governing organization behind it?
It's the United Nations.
United Nations, yeah. So it'd be pretty neat experience. Mm-hmm. There are a couple here in the United States.
There is, and I can't quite remember exactly. I know of two. There's Grand Rapids, and there's one in Lower Portland. Greater Portland, it's called, sorry.
And then some of the other places in the world.
Well, in most countries in the world, they have them. Europe has quite a number of them. Canada has quite a number. Australia has four. Only three of them are really active. And two of them are newer than ours, and we're only 4 years. So we try and work together on programs. And my manager works different programs to me. So what I try and do is we've been down to the one in Victoria, and we look at the high schools and what we do with our high schools there using some of our programs down there. Mm. Yeah.
That's exciting.
Sounds like a really neat connection, you know, globally.
It
all
is.
Focused on the same issues
right.
and sharing.
Right.
I'm sure there's a whole lot of sharing.
A lot of sharing.
Yeah, that goes
right.
on.
We pinch their ideas. They pinch
oh, I like that. Pinch. We say steal.
Yes,
we steal their ideas.
Okay.
Pinch their ideas.
Pinch. Yes.
Another. I'm using that as well.
Okay. Mingling and pinching. Yeah.
One more, and I might have to start charging.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
That's all right. I'm sure you deserve it. You'll use it well.
Yeah. Yeah. So. You know, one thing I know Nancy focuses on for us at Berea is helping to integrate sustainability throughout all of our curriculum.
Yeah.
Do you guys do that?
Yes, we do. This is one of the jobs that my manager looks after and focuses on is the embedding sustainability into all our programs. And we're managing to do a lot. But there's still a long way to go, and I'm sure you'd understand that.
I do. I'm really curious how the balance works out between trying to encourage faculty to infuse sustainability wherever possible versus having a required course, something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We don't have... I think the one of the issues that I see is if the faculty want to do it, they'll do it.
Mm-hmm.
If they don't, then it's going to take a long time to convince them. And a lot of times it's, what's that got to do with what I teach?
Right.
Mm-hmm. And
right.
it's
and in some areas it may really not seem to have a
yeah.
lot at first.
And it's mm-hmm. very, and it can be difficult to encourage them to look at the possibility of seeing the connection.
Yes.
Yeah. But we find that if they're already doing something around sustainability, whichever, whatever, it doesn't take much to get them to embed it even more, but if they're not, then it does take it is difficult. We can offer some funding for different programs. So if somebody says, "Well, I'm not quite sure," I might have to do some research on that. We'll go, "Well, we can always give you a little bit of money."
Funding always helps.
It
yes.
does. Yeah.
Do you have any favorite stories of classes that changed or classes that got added? From unusual or surprising areas? Maybe.
I think the sustainability tourism is the one that comes to mind because it wasn't originally sustainable tourism. It was just basically tourism. So that was about 3 years ago. We offered them some funding for a research assistant to research into what other universities were doing. So then they developed their program. Mm-hmm. So that's the one that I remember. There's probably lots more, but that one in particular. And so that was changed to sustainable tourism.
Mm-hmm. I like that research assistant, because basically you're buying a person time.
Yeah.
In a sort of indirectly.
Yeah. So yeah.
That's good.
So that's good. But I'm really interested now that I'm here to hear what goes on in Berea, and just seeing what I've seen so far. It's such a beautiful town.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the things that brought me here when I met Joan. We don't have such a thing as a Labour College in Australia. And just to see what the students do and how they react to having to work, because our students don't have to work to pay. They get, it's basically a student loan, which I know that they have here as well. But then they don't have to start paying for it till they get a job and earn over so much money. But my interest is in how the students feel about what they're doing and what makes them want to come here and do it, and what they learn from that, what their experiences are.
Right. I think one of the reasons why the Labour College works as well as it does is because within our region, Appalachia, people have a really strong ethic of, they might not be able to pay for something, but they also don't want to accept something for nothing. So, you know, the midwife used to charge you in eggs or chickens or whatever, you know, garden produce or whatever you had. And obviously that doesn't make the midwife rich, but she'll get out of there with something.
Yeah.
So at some level, the Labour College model helps families understand that this is not something for nothing, that this is a deal, and we're in this together. And I think that the students contributing to the university and how it works, maybe too much helps them allay any sense of guilt, because actually our alumni donor rates are probably lower than we'd like, and lower than you might think, given that you'd think the students had something really huge to be grateful for. And they do, and there have been some improvements in that recently. A couple of student groups called Berea, a student group called Berea Patrons is actually giving back from their labor dollars that they earn to the college before they even graduate.
Wow. So, which is pretty remarkable.
It is really remarkable, because it's not like they're making a lot. So that makes it really clear that they believe in the model.
Right. Yeah. Plus, I've had students tell me that they, especially the transfer students that have come in, they talk about how the labor program here is the great equalizer, because in other colleges or universities, some students have to work. And other students don't.
Yeah.
And so if you're saddled with working, are you at a disadvantage, maybe, you know, in your classes because of the amount of time?
That's right.
So the students, they say it's a good feeling to know that everybody's in the same boat.
Yeah, that's good. I mean, we're the lucky country. You don't have to work if you don't want to. Our students get allowances as well from the government. Not only can they get the loan, basically, but they also can get an allowance. So, if they're living away from home, they get a living away from home allowance. It's not a lot, but it helps them to not have to work while they're studying.
And not have to starve.
That's
good. I suspect your college, your rates of college-educated people are higher. There's a name for what your percent of college-educated people is higher in Australia than here.
It is quite high, which is in itself a bit of an issue, because there's not enough jobs for our graduates. So that's a huge issue, and also the programs that the way that it's changing in education, and especially looking more around environmental sustainable programs. The jobs still aren't out there for the students, so we do have a lot of graduates that have spent 4 years or 3 years at university and still go and work behind the counter in a shop, because they can't get a job. So I do have, I suspect that everywhere.
We definitely have that. I found it, especially with students who love the environment, but they think loving the environment is sort of tree hugging, and that skills are not necessary to hug trees. And unfortunately, those skills are necessary. And and then I also find that even though political skill is necessary and dealing with people is necessary, that often the students who major in environmental policy have a harder time finding those jobs. It's not quite so tragic here at Berea, because the students graduate with small debt and they can go work for a nonprofit and get the experience they need. But when I worked at a it wasn't officially a for-profit college, but it sort of ran that way. And the students would graduate with $80,000 in debt.
Oh my goodness.
And an environmental policy degree. And wow. They were, no. they're still not, I mean, of course, none of the students I've had have ever paid off that debt.
So, yeah.
Wow. And who knows that they ever can.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, you'll see today when we go over to the Cloverbottom Cottage, our home for Office of Sustainability, we've structured the labor program there like a small city.
Okay.
So really, Berea College is a city.
I mean,
we have energy, we have water, we have waste, we have food, we have buildings, we have worship,
housing.
Mm-hmm. So I was fortunate, very fortunate, to be allocated with the number of students that I had asked for.
Yeah.
So we have, each student is a champion of some aspect of sustainability.
Okay.
So we have a waste diversion coordinator, alternative transportation, sustainable foods, sustainable purchasing, data reporting, energy and water conservation. So there's a total of 12. And so the other reason why I wanted to structure it that way, we also have communications and marketing position and a graphic design web development position.
Uh-huh.
And events and training coordinator. Mm. So I wanted the students to be able to learn how to integrate and work together. So I have a student that is a champion of sustainable foods, but she doesn't have to design logos, you know? She doesn't have to create videos to promote.
But more importantly, she has to work with the person who
creates
logos.
Yeah.
Because, as my colleague Mary Whitney from Chatham once said, all environmental work is teamwork.
Totally.
So
totally.
You absolutely have that team together working all in one place.
Right. So that is a benefit to Berea, because they not only graduate with an academic transcript, but they graduate with a work transcript as well.
That is so important, and it's such a great model. We try and we call them co-op students that work a couple of days a week, fitting in with their studies. And they work, the program's 400 hours, and they get a very tiny salary, but they do get paid for their work. And the ones that we've had come through have said that it's made such a huge difference.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, the young girl that works in our office now is tenured. She was a co-op student when she started.
Mm.
So we've kept her because she was just so good.
Yeah.
And yeah, so we've been very lucky to have been able to get tenure for her.
Right.
And so.
Yeah, the worst thing as a labor supervisor is they graduate.
The really
good ones go, you know.
Yes. Well, Joan and I have talked about plotting together so that we could fail some of those really good ones in their academic work, so she could get them a little longer. But
exactly.
That could only hold out for so long.
So do you ever have the possibility of perhaps then employing them within the college, not just in your area, but within the college? Do they end up, can that
afterward
happen?
Yeah, a lot of the staff at Berea are former students, and actually a fair number of faculty are former students. So it can work out for some in the long run. Probably it doesn't work out for as many as would like it to.
Yep.
It's definitely a town where once people come, they want to stay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there are only so many jobs for them. But but we do get to employ some. And there's also a program now called, there's been a bridge program for some time, which is sort of imagining how students get to Berea, how they get through Berea and then out. And part of the bridge program is giving them further work qualifications for some graduates, specifically jobs to work at the college.
Mm-hmm.
And that helps a little bit.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Unfortunately, again, though, the really good ones sometimes spring the coop and decide that they want to leave town, and we really don't appreciate that.
Exactly. They leave, we stay.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Then we have to make new friends and stick together.
The good thing is each year we have a new crop of amazing, amazing students that come in. So I've got two first years on the team this year that have been spectacular.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you get energized. You say goodbye to one, and then you get energized when you see, hopefully you have 4 years with another.
That would be great.
Yeah.
Well, it has been so lovely having you. We're about at the end of our time on People, Profit, and Planet this week on WBER. Joan, any last words on our...
No, I'm so honored that, you know, Helen would carve out some of her time from such a long play.
I feel like a rock star.
Well, that's good. We like to make our guests feel like that.
Thank you very much.
Well, tune in next week on People, Profit, and Planet on WBER.